Jerry Seppas, the dean of the Manship School of Mass Communication at LSU. You wrote a column in The Advocate a few weeks ago about leakers, and the president is not happy about leakers. Most people aren't, but is that just part of the fabric of American journalism, unidentified sources who leak information?
Well, I think it is, and this aura has developed around the word leak, which in my day wasn't even used. When I was reporting in City Hall in Rochester, New York, at the start of my career, somebody would give me a tip that a new police chief was going to be named, and I wouldn't use it, but I would check it out. And you might wonder why somebody would do that. Well, as a reporter friend at The Advocate said to me yesterday, people like to gossip. That's one reason. Some people think the public should know that information before it's official. Some people think maybe they'll get a favor out of it. So if you're a reporter, you need to weigh all those things. But there is nothing inherently wrong with leaks or tips or giving someone information. And when there's an administration that loves secrecy, as this one does, the tips or leaks fill the void.
Mm-hmm. But anonymous sources, do they have the same credibility as somebody who will go on the record?
No, absolutely not. And you have to handle them much more carefully. And you'll probably disregard a lot of what you get anonymously. But when somebody hands you a document and you can validate that document, you might say to yourself, this is important information. I understand why the person won't go on the record. I have made sure that it's real, so I'm going to tell the public about it.
Is it fake news, though? That's what the president says when somebody won't put their name on something they're quoted as saying. He doesn't put any credibility at all. Is that just convenience, or is that a legitimate observation from the commander-in-chief?
Well, what it is mostly is irony, because friends in Washington tell me that the president and many others in the administration love going off the record, as every administration has done, and supplying information. So there's a certain irony there when the leaker-in-chief says he hates leaks.
Well, when I was a young reporter, I would have newsmakers at times saying, this is on background, and then occasionally say, this is on deep background. And at first, I didn't know what they were talking about, but that's been part of the process for a very long time, isn't it?
That's correct, and I think if you go back to colonial days, you'll find unnamed sources in the antique newspapers that you see at museums or in the Manship School. So it is not new, and aura that has been built up around leaks is really unnecessary. And it's pretty amazing if you think about stories we wouldn't know about if it weren't for leaks or tips. The Pentagon Papers, Watergate, Edward Snowden, when he released his documents, showed that a lot of us were being listened in on by the National Security Agency. Michael Flynn's conversations with Russian diplomats we learned about through leaks. We learned that the president spilled some classified information to Russians in the Oval Office through leaks.
We learned that Alton Sterling officers would not be charged in his death through a leak. It was the Washington Post that broke that story through a leak. 877-217-5757 and talk@talklouisiana.org. For Jerry Seppas, dean of the LSU Manship School of Mass Communication, recognized as one of the best in the United States, and this is at a time that Jerry Seppas, for his 6 years, has battled massive budget cuts on campus, so we might talk a bit about that as well. But a listener, Nicholas, notes that Donald Trump himself, it's clearly his voice using the pseudonym John Barron and John Miller, that he would leak things to reporters.
Yeah, supposedly he would call the New York Post and leak juicy, gossipy society and other items about himself or others. And that just shows that all of us enjoy gossiping, and there is nothing inherently wrong with, again, I wonder about the word leaks, but with tips or leaks or whatever they are.
Well, last week when Congressman Scalise was shot, it's been 6 days, the media were given part of the blame. I think politicians rightly gave themselves some of the blame, but are the media responsible for the vitriol we're seeing in American politics right now, at least partly?
I don't think so. I think Donald Trump's leaks have more, tweets have more vitriol than newspaper stories. I uh, I don't agree with that.
The Twitter phenomenon is a new one, but it is real, and it is where a lot of the action is happening in American journalism.
Yeah, it really is, and the president says that the mainstream media hates his tweets. Actually, we all love his tweets because he's right. They do give us direct insight into what he's thinking at any moment, and, I mean, that's really an upside. You're in the past, you haven't been able to know exactly what a president was thinking, and here is a candid, direct comment from him via Twitter.
Well, a story today that is gaining some momentum, particularly in conservative circles, is that Joy Reid, the MSNBC host, tweeted some inflammatory things about Steve Scalise when the congressman was battling for his life. Is there a time when you, and there's nothing in her tweets that is inaccurate, but when the man's on his near deathbed, is that the time to be tweeting things about his voting record?
Well, you know me, I'm a traditional journalist, and I would say absolutely not. That is certainly not the time. And when you get into journalists tweeting, I don't know if these people are journalists or entertainers, but I'm careful about what I tweet, because even if it's under my name, conceivably somebody could think it represents the views of LSU or the Manship School, and I think that's a problem. If I were an editor right now, I would be very conflicted. I would want my reporters to tweet about their own stories and be proud of them, but I would just caution them not to go that extra step and say, here's what I really think. I think the president's lying, but I couldn't write it. If you can't write it, you have to be careful when you tweet it.
And in the president's case, he's creating news stories with his tweets. He's, at times, he's saying things his lawyers are not saying, saying things his press corps, the people who represent him, are not saying. So the contradictory nature of what the president is doing is, I would think, causing him some grief, but it doesn't look like he's going to stop tweeting.
Doesn't look like he's going to stop, and as I said, most of us, in a strange way, appreciate the value of his tweets, because we can't get through on the phone to say, what are you thinking right now, sir? And you do know this way. And consider this. His press people are more and more hunkering down. And if you can't ask them questions, I think it's valuable probably to have the president's tweets.
It was a bizarre media briefing yesterday.
I've never seen anything like it. Well, I couldn't see it because video wasn't allowed.
Nor audio.
Audio wasn't allowed. And if I were a president or a press secretary who didn't trust the press, as these people are, I would say, please record it so I can prove that you misquoted me or something. Why would you want to keep it almost secret? A briefing, by its very nature, can't be secret. It was absolutely bizarre. And today, Jim, no briefing is scheduled at all. The daily briefing is no longer the daily briefing.
Well, and the president has threatened to shut them down.
Yeah, and you know what? If I were a Washington bureau chief right now, I would tell my reporters, you are going to get zero out of the daily briefing. Let's do A, B, and C away from the briefing and use your time that way.
877-217-5757 or talk at talklouisiana.org. For Jerry Seppas, the dean of the LSU School of Mass Communication, the Manship School, he has held that position now for almost 6 years as of next month. Jerry has covered news for a long time. It's been 45 years since Watergate. You were a very young reporter at that time. Does this have remnants of Watergate, or is it too early to tell?
It's too early to tell, but the hunkering down syndrome is reminiscent of Watergate. The speed at which this is moving is far faster than Watergate, in part because of technology. You didn't have Richard Nixon tweeting, that's for sure. So, there are some similarities, but I'd be careful about going too far right now.
But this so-called liberal bias, is it real or is it imaginary?
I think a little bit of it is real, for sure. If you surveyed American journalists, you'd find that most of them would identify as Democrats or as liberal Democrats or something like that. I think the system at good news organizations generally prevents that from sneaking in, but once in a while it does. I was struck Sunday. It was just two words that bothered me in Sunday's New York Times, and in outstanding story about General Flynn's business relationships and how he became a a consultant, which everybody is in Washington. But there was a line in there that said, "But he's not like the usual Beltway bandit." And I thought, boy, it's somebody just slipped by not taking that out.
This was in a straight news story, not a column.
Straight news story on the front page of the New York Times, and fairly like in the, I don't know, sixth or seventh paragraph. And I would have just struck that out. So once in a while, our thoughts do get in. And probably many of us think that a lot of the consultants in Washington are bandits, but I wouldn't say it in a straight news story.
Mm-hmm. Well, Fox News, which has had some upheaval with Roger Ailes being forced out and now dead, and Bill O'Reilly being forced out, they've traded fair and balanced for most watched, most trusted. What do you think?
Well, at least they're being honest in getting rid of fair and balanced. Anyway, I think Fox is an aberration that wouldn't have happened a couple of or three decades ago. I also think that if you mix in the morality of Fox executives outside of journalism, just in the workplace, you have to wonder: Do I trust what these people are reporting?
A listener, Tracy, notes that CNN for years has had the motto "most trusted news and journalism" or something like that. So they're now they're both most trusted.
So, hey, most networks. If you're not the network itself, but if you're an automobile manufacturer and you say best safety rating goes to Chevrolet or something, most networks will require documentation of that before they broadcast it. But if you're the network, I guess you could say what you want to say.
The most trusted. That's right. Hard to quantify.
That is.
Now, Megyn Kelly left Fox, and she's at NBC, and she's gotten off to an interesting start. This interview with Alex Jones, some people say she shouldn't have done it. I heard David Falkenflik on NPR yesterday defending her. Alex Jones is a rogue journalist, if you could call him a journalist. He's more of an entertainer or a commentator. But he has been a lot of places over the last 20 years, including on this show. And I recall him saying that Ronald Reagan, the 40th American president, was not shot by John Hinckley, but was shot in the car by a Secret Service agent on this show. He's a nut, but he had a spot on NBC prominently with Megyn Kelly. And the president watches him religiously, apparently, based on reports. So is Alex Jones news, or is having him on a major network a poor choice?
I'll avoid answering your question by saying that I don't quite understand if Megyn Kelly is an entertainer or a journalist. And if she's an entertainer, I don't particularly care who she has on. If she's a journalist, my only question, and I don't see it as a big philosophical issue, my only question is, why do you want to devote so much airtime to a nutcase? And to tell you the truth, we did not watch it Sunday night. Not for philosophy, but I just had no interest in hearing in that case.
Well, she did challenge him, and I think the big news is that he has an audience with the President of the United States, and she accurately pointed out statements that Alex Jones would make, and then a day later, the President would make the same statements. So he is at least giving some credence to the things this guy says. So.
Which might be some slight justification for her to have him on the air, too. If the president listens to him, I guess it's okay for others to listen to him.
Well, at any rate, the news world is changing by the moment, and Megyn Kelly is trying to create attention, and she accomplished that. And so in television particularly, and to some extent in radio, are sometimes we so interested in getting an audience that we'll do almost anything to get that audience.
Yeah, that's why it's hard for a person with a print journalism background like mine to weigh who's right and who's wrong on broadcast outlets. I prefer, again, being a traditionalist, I prefer breaking important news stories as the best way to attract an audience. But you're right. Different media have different methods.
Well, 20 years ago, polls showed that most Americans trusted the media. That's not the case any longer. What's happened during the last two decades?
Well, the trite answer is that I think every establishment has gone downhill in public respect, whether it's politicians or the press or other people. I think we've all become more skeptical, and to a certain extent, I think that's a good thing. I don't want people to believe everything that they read or hear, and that's why we have an endowed chair in media literacy, so that we can help teach students how to measure how to decide what they should believe. So while it hurts my ego that the press is held in less regard than it used to be, I think it's probably not a terrible thing.
Another listener asks about the secrecy of the healthcare negotiations. 13 U.S. senators on the Republican side are apparently putting together a plan which may very well be voted on with no debate. And right now, the only news coverage of this is the Democrats holding a filibuster. But if this happens, is this a big news story?
It is a very big news story. The Washington Post today had a story headline, "In Trump's Washington, Public Business is Increasingly Handled Behind Closed Doors." And the first example that the Post gave was that health care bill. And I just find it personally offensive because I'm very interested in health care, just because I'm an older guy who needs it. And I find it shocking that no women senators are involved. I understand that Senator Cassidy, an expert whose views you may or may not agree with, but he does understand the issue. I understand he's not part of those 13. I find it shocking. Yes.
877-217-5757. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, you're on Talk Louisiana with Dean Jerry Seppos. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Jim. Yes, sir. My question to these. First of all, I think that the fourth estate or the journalists are doing a much better job holding this administration to account, because I know there was the disaster of the lead up to the invasion of Iraq in 2003 that was very much I think journalists got that wrong, and I appreciate what's going on now. My question is, now that there was so much on the internet of like HuffPost and those journalists, do you think they're going to be held to account, or that there's a way for them to legitimize themselves?
Yeah, I think many of them, and HuffPost is a good example, and I visited BuzzFeed last week in New York, and I think they've both tried to become more professional, may not be the right word. I think they will be held to account, and I think it's great that there are now not just a few major newspapers looking at these issues, but all sorts of, Vox and BuzzFeed and everybody else. So I think it's made everybody more competitive, which has been good for citizens and good for journalism.
LSU has quite an alumni representation in the nation's capital, particularly journalists.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We in fact had a reception for Manship alums, and it was quite amazing. Journalists, lobbyists, staff people. It was really something. Congressman Graves, who did not go to the Manship School, stopped by, and it was great. And all of the talk, not just a little bit of the talk, was about the Trump administration.
John Breaux, former U.S. senator turned lobbyist, 73 years young, but still spry. He's going to be in Baton Rouge soon to teach at LSU's journalism school. That's quite a get.
Thank you. We're really proud of that. We specialize, as you know, Jim, in the study of media and public affairs, which is not a bad niche to have right now. And I can't think of anyone better to give direct examples and anecdotes about how government works. His class filled up immediately, and we're really looking forward to hearing from the horse's mouth about Washington.
Well, John Breaux is a guy who knows the lay of the land pretty well.
Sure,
he was elected to Congress when he was 28 in 1972, and his motto was "Experience counts." And he kept on winning and winning and winning until he finally left in 2004. And was succeeded by David Bruce Vitter in the U.S. Senate. Here's an interesting finding that the New York Times reported on its front page last Friday, that the Pew study has a new survey showing 45% of Democrats and 46% of Republicans hold very unfavorable views, not just unfavorable, but very unfavorable views of the opposing party. Now, are the media stirring this up, or are people just digging in their heels? What's happening in the regard that right now we hate the other side, no matter which side we're on, more than quite often we hate real enemies of the U.S.?
I don't think you can blame it on the media, even if there were no media. Hard to imagine. I think you'd still have people saying, I just don't understand the other party. And I really don't know what's caused the polarization, and it has developed over a period of years. It has not just suddenly sprung up, but it's dangerous and worrisome, and I don't know the answer to your question. It is so mysterious.
Well, newspapers have, I think, by and large, tried to stay neutral. But a good question from a listener, John, asking about talk radio. Has talk radio contributed to this polarization in our country?
I believe it has, but I have to say, being a somewhat a coastal person until I moved down here, I rarely tuned into to such radio, and I still actually don't. But from what I understand about it, it probably has fed the base, as the term goes, of both parties.
But it's mostly from a conservative slant.
Radio has developed, for reasons I don't understand, or maybe you do, in a conservative way, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a conservative hangout when it comes to talk. There are some exceptions, but liberal talk hasn't worked. Air America was a failure, despite Al Franken and Jerry Springer.
That's right.
And Rachel Maddow.
Well, I was going to say Rachel Maddow on TV has somewhat...
Yeah, well, MSNBC is moving rather nicely now and has moved ahead of Fox. They have benefited enormously from Bill O'Reilly's faux pas. And it is interesting. That would mean almost by extension that the audience to some degree has moved from Fox to MSNBC. And I can't figure that one out.
Neither can I. The only possible explanation is that Democrats are more and more concerned about President Trump and are paying more attention to the situation. I don't know the answer. Actually, today's Georgia House race might tell us a little bit about all that.
Yeah, and that will come down to turnout.
Yep.
And who's energized.
Yep.
And some would say if the Democrats can't energize their base now, can they ever energize their base? But a listener notes, and it is a valid observation, that surveys show that a lot of liberals, for example, listen to Rush Limbaugh. Liberals, by nature, are, I suppose, open-minded to other views, and sometimes they like to get worked up, and that's a good way to do it. So maybe some of the people who were watching Fox, who are from the left, have gravitated to MSNBC enough that they're now number one in several time slots that they were not number one before.
Yeah, it's interesting. I especially am stunned when I see that MSNBC and Fox sometimes, or Fox often, beats CNN, and I have no connections that I can think of, no important connections to CNN, but I find it very impressive broadcast journalism, and I know not everybody agrees with me, but I really do.
Well, and I often thought it was unfair for CNN to be tagged as the counter to Fox,
right?
Because it really wasn't. Now, MSNBC, yes, but not CNN.
I completely agree with you, and that may show the polarization. If you're fair, you're rated as being with the other side.
Remember when it was called the Clinton News Network?
Yes,
by
I do.
Its detractors?
Yes.
But the Trump story... MSNBC is all over it, and if you were to watch MSNBC, which I do, I watch all of them, but I see those programs with Lawrence O'Donnell and Rachel Maddow, you would think that an indictment might be imminent of the president, that he's in hot water, and then in other places, it's as though this is fake news and that's a witch hunt, and the president's going to be okay. Where is the truth, Jerry Seppas?
I think good journalists don't predict what's going to happen. So the answer is, I don't know. However, I did find it interesting last night that CNN's White House correspondent was quite worked up about the fact that audio and video weren't allowed in the briefing, and that Sean Spicer didn't say mm-hmm. much of anything anyway. And while it was not subjective journalism that he did, he made clear what his thoughts were. And Baton Rouge's own Don Lemon, who went to the Manship mm-hmm. School, later in the evening continued that questioning about why in the world would you not allow audio and video, and is this thing even worth going to?
An interesting observation from a listener about the Supreme Court taking up a racial gerrymandering case.
Yeah.
And now this may also have contributed to the polarization, is that the congressional districts and many of the state districts for House members and senators in individual states, they're drawn so that the extremes benefit. There's really no district where a moderate, there aren't many, where a moderate can survive. So maybe that's part of it as well.
It could be, and very closely related to that is that a huge number, and I don't have the number handy, of House seats are viewed as safe forever, and people have a job for life. And that used to happen to some extent, especially in the Democratic South, but it is just remarkable today how few swing districts there are, and that very much applies to Louisiana.
This race in Georgia tonight will be the election results, and it's to succeed the health secretary that Donald Trump appointed, and I'm sure he thought that it was a safe Republican district when he made this appointment, right. But it's a toss-up according to all surveys, and it could be a very long night. And I would imagine if you watch Fox or MSNBC, there's going to be some cheering or jeering depending on the outcome.
I think you're probably right, and you've given me a good idea. I will not stick to CNN tonight. I'll flip around and see what others are saying, but I'm looking forward to tonight.
But it will be viewed as a bellwether for the country.
Yeah, I worry just a tiny bit about that and about words such as bellwether. Yeah, it's really interesting, and one person is going to win and the other is going to be very close to the winner. If I were writing the story, I'm not sure I know what that means. Yeah, it means that a Republican or Democrat mm-hmm. has won. It should not have been this close a race. And beyond that, I'm not quite sure it's worth all the time and attention.
The most expensive congressional race in U.S. history.
Well, so I'm probably wrong because other people care about it.
Well, I think it's because of the symbolism more than anything else, because it's not going to shake up the majority in the U.S. House, at least not right now.
Right.
And then we had this bizarre Montana election where the winner beat up a reporter on election eve. That shows that there is probably more heat than light on the campaign trail right now.
There is, but it also proves something that I try to teach our students in media ethics, and that is that video and the availability of video to all of us with our phones has changed everything. It has just changed the journalism and political and criminal and every other landscape, because if there were not the video, the audio, I guess, in that case, sorry, audio of the guy, the reporter being slammed against the wall, I think it would have been he said, he said, and instead it wasn't. And it's actually interesting that I made a point about saying video is important, but audio is too.
Audio as well.
Yeah.
As a result, Congressman Gianforte will be doing 40 hours of community service as he serves the great state of Montana,
yes.
The entire state, by the way,
yes.
Because of the low population numbers in Montana. But Jerry Cephas, it's always a pleasure to talk with you, and hopefully we'll have you back soon.
Good. Thank you, Jim. And